Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The Four Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
This is all you really have to think about when it comes to posture. I think that people, when they think about like sitting up straight or like what their mothers told them, you know, you could end up like puffing out your chest, which doesn't look that great. Or you feel like you're like a pupil in a classroom that also doesn't look that great. It looks very rigid. There's only one thing I want you to think about when it comes to posture, which is the distance between your earlobe and your shoulder. Weirdest distance, I know, but that is actually, especially on video calls, it's also, or in profile photos, the distance between your earlobe and your shoulder, the shorter that is, the more defeated, ashamed, and embarrassed or low power you look. And that is because, and you can try this, if you shrink your head down and roll your shoulders up, and I'm doing it right now, you can actually hear I have less vocal power. The moment I relax my shoulders, I have a lot more volume. I am able to stay a little bit lower in my range. And that is because confident people, their shoulders are down and back. Their chin and their head is up really high, not out, but high. They have their chest nice and relaxed and their arms are loose by their side. When you walk into a bar, when you hop on video, when you walk into a meeting, I want you to maximize the distance between your ear and your shoulder. That's all I want you to think about. That is the most powerful thing you can do for your posture.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Vanessa, welcome back to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
It's so good to be back.
It is my pleasure to have you back. I think, you know, you are probably one of my favorite podcast guests. I remember, I think when I was on your show, we were joking. It's like when my older roommate, Matt, asked about you, it was like, what's Vanessa like? I was like, Vanessa is like the hot girl who doesn't know she's hot. She's really nice.
Yeah. It's like the nicest thing to say.
But all joking aside, you have a new book out called Cues, all of which we will get into. Last time I asked you about your social group in high school, and this time I wanted to start by asking, what did your parents do for work? And how did that end up shaping and influencing the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Fun question. I've never been asked that. So both of my parents are entertainment lawyer producers. So both of my parents are very analytical. And what's funny is I think that what shaped me less in their jobs would be more the fact that they got divorced when I was about 3 and immediately remarried. And I had to switch houses every 3.5 days. So I was constantly bouncing back and forth between 2 totally different families. My dad went on to raise his own family. I was one of 4. Lived in a totally different neighborhood. My mom, it was just me. She ended up having a very successful career. I was kind of at home alone. And so I was bouncing between literally 2 totally different households. And it made me have to be not only adaptable, but I was a little bit, I had to be able to read the adults in the room very quickly because I had literally just been gone. And that, I think, is why I'm so obsessed with reading people.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, you know, how you navigate the social dynamics of going back and forth between these 2 families. I mean, what is that process of adaptation and, you know, what does it look like day to day? And how do you do that without losing your mind? Because that seems like a lot for a kid to take on.
It was so much. And I think, so there's 2 ways I think that we can be adaptable as humans, which is exactly what happened to me, which is either you're a chameleon. So you go into a place and you completely adopt whatever norms, body language, voice tone, language is being used around you. The other way that you do it is you become staunchly and ruthlessly yourself. So you go in and you're like, I don't care what any of the other people are doing. This is me. Accept me for who I am or who I'm not. My elementary school years, I was a chameleon and it was exhausting. That's when I had my most awkwardness at school. I had social hives all over my body. So I'd have to often go to school in like turtlenecks and long sleeves and pants because I had like welts all over my body. I would like have panic attacks at school and at home because I was trying so hard to fit in and it wasn't me. My teenage years, I switched into the second, which I think a lot of teenagers also might have dipped into that ruthlessly myself. And that caused its own problems because then I had a lot of fights with my parents and my siblings. And so that was very formative because now I feel like awkwardness. I joke that I'm a recovering awkward person, as you know. Everyone who's listening, I'm sure, has some kind of awkwardness. That could be awkward silences. That could be not feeling like yourself. That could be feeling like you're being too much of a chameleon, like you're having to adapt to everyone else. Everyone's awkwardness dresses up in a different way. Some people become, they shut down. They become, they hold back. They hide themselves. Other people raise up. They become overly dramatic and over-talkative and show-offy. And so I think what's really interesting is to think about, how does your awkwardness dress up? What do you do? Do you shut down or do you dial up?
Yeah. So your parents being entertainment lawyers and incredibly analytical, were they naturally charismatic communicators?
You know, my dad is exceptionally charismatic. I actually just interviewed him on my YouTube channel because I wanted him to talk about his charisma. And my mom has learned charisma. So my mom has learned, and I actually would talk to her about this, she's learned like the structure of conversation, just like a lawyer would. And she knows which conversation starters to use and when. So I think that I might've picked up more on that side. I don't think that I'm naturally charismatic. And so I think that I had to learn soft skills, like a foreign language. It just didn't come naturally. So I have to think of conversation starters, like I say this word now, now I do a head tilt. Now I need to eyebrow raise. And so for me, it's much more like trying to learn a foreign language.
Yeah. Why do you think it is that certain people are actually naturally charismatic, and you know, how much of that has to do, you think, with upbringing, you know, environment, parents, peers?
There is a little bit of research on this. Now, charisma and leadership are not interchangeable, right? So some leaders are not charismatic, but I think a lot of leaders become leaders because they are charismatic. And some research identifies it, and this is approximate, that 70% of our leaders are based on life choices. So how they got there was based on their choices, and 30% is genetic. I don't know exactly how they measure that genetic aspect, but their argument is that most leaders have actually learned to figure out what is charismatic so they can interact with people. So when it comes down to like the research, what makes someone charismatic, this is the research that I totally opened my eyes to how people interact, was very simple. Finally explained why are these charismatic people charismatic, which is highly charismatic people rank high in two traits. And if they rank high in these two traits, people want to be around them. They are high in warmth and competence. And that is that leaders who are warm, open, collaborative, trustworthy, but at the very same time, they're also capable, competent, powerful, and impressive. Those are the people we want to be around. And if there's any mismatch or there's an uneven amount of either of those things, we don't consider them charismatic.
Okay, so that raises a question, as you and I were talking about my obsession with, you know, how Steve Jobs ran Apple. I mean, Steve Jobs was kind of the opposite of warm, and yet he was perceived as highly charismatic. So how do you, what explains that paradox?
So I think, if you read some of the biographies of Steve Jobs, he was very, very high in competence, right? So he like off the charts in powerful, impressive, capable, efficient. But he knew how to add just enough warmth to get the job done. And if you read his biography and they break down sort of how he got people on board, some of his discussions with people, warmth is not just a smiley, bubbly person. I think that's the misconception of warm people. Yes, there is a warmth that's like smiley and bubbly. And that was never Steve Jobs. But warmth can also be vulnerability. Warmth can also be collaboration. And that's where Steve Jobs got his warmth. My argument and the way that I see this working with him is He was ruthlessly competent, but he knew he could never do it alone. He knew without a doubt that he needed people, that he needed his team. He hired the best of the best. I think that that's the difference between him and maybe a cold or competent narcissist. Someone who's just competent, they could do it all themselves. They don't need anyone. They don't need any help. They can do it better than anyone. Steve Jobs knew other people can do this really well and I need them. And so his warmth was that he's like, I have big goals. I want to get it done, but I need you. And that's a vulnerability too, right? Saying like, I need you to do this. And I'm putting my full faith in you. That's competence meets warmth.
So random question, where were you in the birth order amongst all these kids? And, you know, how do you get yourself heard?
What's that? Do you want to guess?
I would guess either you're the youngest or in the middle.
So I am the only of my parents, which is sort of an interesting thing. So my parents, they had me and I got divorced when I was really young. And then I immediately got an older stepbrother. And then my parents had two younger sisters. So I'm either an only or a middle, depending on how you look at it. Right? Like half the time, half my life, I was an only. And then at the other house, I was a middle.
Okay. So in the other house, when you're in the middle, how is it that you get yourself heard in that situation? Because like, I remember reading the sections on, you know, vocal expression, and we'll get to that. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, my family has one volume. It's loud.
Yes. So actually, let's talk about vocal power for a second, because I just love it. And I think that I have a younger sister who has a very unique vocal power. So I think about this a lot in terms of our family. So when the research looks at vocal power, we know that an authoritative person does two things. One is they cue you to their vocal power by speaking in their lowest natural register. So right now, I'm working really hard with you to speak in my lowest register. When I'm talking to my husband or my daughter, I'll go a little higher up here. And this is still natural for me, but if I were to give my entire interview like this, it would drive you crazy, right? So I'm down here with you because research knows that, or when we take up space in our body, when confident people are relaxed, we're in our lowest register. Lower registers are heard without as much volume. So this is why a lot of the times in a big group with lots of siblings, actually, the lower you go, the more you'll hear. That baritone is actually heard better. Women often make the mistake of going shrill, and that's because they'll go up really high. Can't you hear me? Listen to me, everyone. Listen to me. And they go all the way up in that higher part of the register, and that actually makes them harder to hear. Whereas the really powerful people, they speak down here, and they get a lot of volume, and they can pierce through that noise. So that's the first thing is, if you want to be heard, especially in a loud room, don't go up here. Don't do it. Don't do this. You're better off going lower and deeper. And that actually can help you be heard. The second thing is the other big mistake that people make with their vocal power is they ask instead of say. So the question inflection is one of my favorite giveaway cues, because when we were doing our lie detection research, so in our lab, we had thousands of people submit videos of themselves lying to us. By the way, this was like the best 6 months of my life. Like, I was so interesting. I was just like, I woke up every day excited to watch these videos. So we had people do a couple different games with us. So we had them play Two Truths and a Lie. That was one of the games we had them play. So Two Truths and a Lie, you say two true statements and one lie. You mix them up and try to get people to guess. One thing that we found is that oftentimes the lie was a question inflection. In other words, liars don't believe what they're saying. And so they're asking, do you believe me? So it sounded like this. I coded all these videos. It would be like, I grew up in Los Angeles. I'm an only child and I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And they would ask that lie. And so the other thing that can happen, especially with siblings, and this is something I talk about with my youngest sister. So are the baby of the family, my youngest sister, she speaks a lot in uptalk in the question inflection. And I think that's because as the baby, she was always asking for things, right? Mm-hmm. She was literally always asking, listen to me, play with me. Can I have water? Can I have a cookie? Can I come in? Wait, like she was always asking things. And so now she's a, 20 something professional, and it's hard because she'll often speak in uptalk. So she'll say, hi, this is Haley. Can I help you? Mm-hmm. Oh, nice to hear from you. Right? Like all up, 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 up. So the other thing I would recommend for folks is listen to your voicemail and also pay attention to the first 10 words out of your mouth. The first 10 words out of your mouth should be on the downward inflection or a neutral inflection. It shouldn't be, "Hi, this is Vanessa. Nice to hear from you. What can I do for you?" Right? Like, it shouldn't be up, 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 up. It should be, "Hey, this is Vanessa. So good to hear from you. What can I do for you?" No. Right? Like, totally different vocal power.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
I want to come back to this. This is particularly fascinating for me as somebody who hosts a podcast.
Yes.
But let's come back to this. What I'm curious about is why this was the natural segue to the previous book and you know, what prompted you to write this book as the next one. And I am always fascinated by the research that you do into this because it just seems extensive.
Oh, I'm really into big data. And the reason for that is because we use a lot of peer review journals in the books and in my work, which I love, but a lot of the times those are small data sets. And also they're all peer reviewed. They use an internal review board. They're very, very official. If I'm going to do my own research, the one thing I can do if I don't have the IRB, if I'm not peer reviewed, is use a lot of data, a lot of the most amount of data we can possibly find. So that's one of the reasons why I try to use big data, is it's one of the few perks we have of being independent. And then the first question you asked, you know, it's just personally, totally transparently, after I wrote Captivate, I was like, I have nothing else to say. It's like, I said it all. That was it. There's nothing left. It took everything out of me. I felt like I had shared every story in the depths of my mind and my body. And then 2 years later, Captivate did really well upon launch. And then it was like, you know, slowly simmering. And then it kind of took off again. There was like this weird, I don't know what happened, but it tipped again. And people started really buying it, started to get picked up again. And I started getting all these questions of things that I didn't address in Captivate, but I had already researched. And it brought me to this little folder that I started on my desktop 17 years ago, which I never would have guessed that this folder would have been a book. 17 years ago, I started clipping what I called curious cues. Again, I had no idea this would end up being a book later. At the time, I was noticing that a lot of bad actors, athletes who were doping, liars in the news, politicians who were lying, not that anyone ever lies in the news, not that politicians ever lie, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, but all these scandals were breaking around that time. And I noticed it didn't matter if they were an athlete or a politician or a celebrity. They were using very similar cues and tells for guilt, shame, fear, and sadness. I was like, wow, this politician is doing the same thing as that athlete who doped. And so I started clipping them. At the same time, I was noticing on the other end of the spectrum, there were all these really charismatic people. Again, politicians, athletes, celebrities, and they were using their own set of very charismatic cues that I would watch a keynote and then a TED talk and then an Ellen interview and then an Oprah interview. And these very charismatic people were using the same cues. And in my mind, it formed this question that I then kept adding and adding and adding to this folder, that maybe there's this universal language of cues, like we speak English or we speak Spanish, speak French. Maybe there's also this language that humans speak through our verbal, nonverbal, vocal, and imagery cues. And could we code it? Like, could I actually find patterns to create like a dictionary or a glossary so we could speak it more purposefully? That question ended up being the start of cues. Who would have guessed it 14 years later?
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, the one thing you say at the very beginning of the book is that the number one way to improve your interactions is to send clear cues based on your goals. When you need more credibility or to be taken seriously in negotiations, pitches, and important interviews, dial up competence. Additionally, if you're with someone who appreciates highly intelligent, capable, efficient people, use more competence cues. Now, we talked briefly about competence and warmth. And, you know, I know you broke this down into a combination, like you said, of verbal, vocal, nonverbal, and imagery cues. So let's start by talking specifically about verbal cues. And when you say verbal cues, are we talking just words in general?
Just words. So verbal cues are just the types of words that we use. And that I would also lump in emojis. I know that's a weird one, but emojis and verbal cues are one and the same because we tend to use them in our texts, our emails, our chats, our Slacks. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, in the interest of, you know, my own self-interest, I'm going to ask you how I use verbal cues more effectively when I'm sending messages on an online dating app.
Love it. Love it. Okay. First, the first thing is you want to use words that trigger or create the correct neural maps. We'll get real science-y on this because this is, I think, how we have to think about it. So a neural map is a cluster of words or ideas around a certain concept. So for example, if in a dating app, you had a picture of yourself skiing, okay, and then you sent a message to a lady friend that said, howdy, just howdy. Let's start with that. Howdy. Say howdy. I'm in Texas, all right? Howdy is a really interesting word, and it triggers all kinds of neural maps. Maybe the South, maybe Texas, maybe cowboy, maybe adventure. That's on the positive side. But it also could create negative cues. Like maybe you hate the South. Maybe you feel like that's a really old school term. Maybe you think that's real nerdy and cheesy. Those are two distinct set of neural maps. I want you to use words that trigger neural maps of your ideal partner. So if you want to attract a woman who is turned on by howdy, I want you to use howdy. If you have a woman who's going to be turned on by bonjour, I want you to use bonjour. If you have a woman who's going to be turned on by aloha, I want you to use aloha. So in other words, I want you to not use default words. I think a lot of the times in our messages, we'll say, hey, hi. That's like throwing away your charisma. It isn't heard. You're going to blend in with everyone else. I would rather you think in the first 10 words of this message, what are at least two or three neural maps that I can trigger for my ideal person? And also, this is going to turn off the wrong people. So mm-hmm. if you say, you know, howdy, let's stick with howdy. I hope you're having a lovely day. Okay, let's just try that. At least that's a little bit positive, a little bit more a kind of a nice question. If you want to level it up a little bit, you could say, howdy, did you have any, what would I say? Howdy, what did you have for breakfast this morning? Just to be different and unique. Now, I'm a breakfast lover, right? Like I could eat breakfast three times a day. So if I'm looking for a partner, I want someone who's like, oh, I love breakfast. I had waffles. I had oatmeal. I don't want someone who's like, oh, I don't eat breakfast. In fact, that would probably turn them off. Like if I had, I'm not going to marry or date someone who doesn't eat breakfast, right? Like I gotta have my breakfast. In other words, this is a silly example, but I want you to begin to think of creating neural maps to repel the wrong people and attract the right ones.
Okay. It's funny you say that because like I will often, you know, on certain dating apps get these messages. There's like literally one where it's like, hey, I'm like, what do you expect me to do with that?
Horrible, right? It's like, that's like saying that's a conversational bomb, right? It's like you're throwing something in the conversation, but like it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help us. Now you have the choice, depending on if you're attracted to them or not, you like their profile, if you're going to take up the conversational load. So I think that there's two different types of conversationalists. There's conversational drivers and there's conversational passengers. I do not think there's in between, by the way. Conversational drivers are typically the ones who carry the load. You know what I'm saying? Like they're the ones willing to ask the hard or interesting questions. They're the ones who come up with the clever answers. They're the ones who bridge topics. They're the ones who will, you know, rekindle after a couple of hours of being quiet. You have to decide if you're willing to be a conversational driver. And if you are, great. You take that, hey, and then you pick up the conversational load and you're like, oh yeah, hey, or howdy in response, or aloha, or whatever it is, or cheerio, or whatever it is that you want to say. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help. You're willing to take that load. If you're not that into them, you can be a passenger, right? And you know what a passenger does? Pay back, right? Yeah. If you don't want to be a driver, you don't have to be. And you can just respond with that, with the mimicry or mirroring with the hey back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little subtle note here. On dating profiles, a little hack I like to use is I like to copy their way that they use emojis. I like to mimic or mirror the way they use words unless they're misspelled. So I do this with my students as well as a verbal sign of respect. So if someone uses a smiley face with a colon and a parentheses, I use a colon and parentheses. If someone uses an equal sign and a parentheses, I use an equal sign of parentheses. I literally will copy the kinds of emojis they use as a verbal respect.
Yeah. Let's talk about two things really quick. Decoding and encoding. You say decoding is how we read and interpret social signals from others. Social signals help us decipher everything about a person, their intentions toward us, their trustworthiness, their competence, and even their personality. Encoding is how we send social cues. We send some cues purposefully. We stand with good posture to show confidence, or we smile to show friendliness. And I want to talk to you about this in maybe a bizarre context, and maybe you're familiar with it or not. So there are two shows recently on Netflix. One is called The Tinder Swindler and the other is called Inventing Anna. And they're both about people who, you know, deceived hundreds of people into believing things about them that were completely untrue.
Wow. I haven't seen either of them, but I'm excited to watch them. Tell me, what's the context?
So Inventing Anna is literally the story of some girl in New York who convinced the entire social elite of New York that she was some German heiress. She got them to basically give her thousands of dollars, spend money. Basically, people allowed her to use their credit cards to stay in like 5-star hotels and spend boatloads of money. And then the Tinder Swindler is a similar story about a guy who basically pretended to be, you know, some sort of billionaire's kid, and swindled one woman after another, where he would get one woman to give him a credit card and then he would use that credit card to go and court some other woman.
It was
madness, but I knew that I wanted to talk to you about it because I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, this would be an interesting Vanessa Van Edwards conversation.
You know, it's so interesting because this is my secret fear with this book. And I really struggle with this. My biggest worry is cues are very powerful. And I am assuming that readers are using them with good intention, but yeah, they can be used with bad intention. And like, that is my biggest worry. I think that charmers and con men and women, they know this invisible language. They speak it very fluently and they can turn it on when they want to. And so that is like my biggest fear is I bet you, and I can't wait to go watch, that this Anna was able to dial up her warmth and her competence. So people were like, oh, and this is the two questions we ask about people. So you talked about decoding and encoding, which is exactly right. When we are with people, we are quickly trying to decode all the cues we're being sent to answer two questions as quickly as possible. The first question we ask about a person is, can I trust you? Are you a threat? Are you on my team? The second question we ask about a person is, can I rely on you? Are you smart? Are you going to give me good information? And we're trying to answer those incredibly quickly. And once we do, we're like, check. So my bet is that these people knew how to very quickly say, you can trust me and you can rely on me. And then people handed over their credit card. That is my biggest concern. And I hope everyone listening is going to read with good intentions.
Okay. So in that case, how do we create the sense of reliability and trust when we're interacting with other people? You know, since, you know, we're talking about dating and, you know, everybody jokes that every guest on this show is a reflection, whatever problem I'm trying to solve in my life, we're going to continue with that as our primary framework. So let's say I'm on a date and I want to quickly communicate that, you know, I'm somebody that this person can trust and that they can rely on.
Okay. So assuming good intentions, this, and by the way, this works on a date, on a video call, in a meeting, works. Actually, the rules are pretty the same based on professional, romantic, or social situations. So the very first thing is, oddly, I'm going to say the weirdest thing on this podcast, which is our palms are sexy. So a lot of the times we think about a date being attractive, getting our hair to look good, making our outfit look right. That's all great. But actually the sexiest part of your body when it comes to those two questions is your palms. And the reason for this, if you think about this from a evolutionary perspective, okay, is when we could see someone's palms, we know they're not hiding anything from us. We know that they're not withholding. If you make a fist, right, a fist is of anger. It's of tension. It's of clenching. A palm is literally the opposite of that. So you want to show your palm within the first 10 seconds. It's literally like saying, you can see my hand. I'm showing you my hand. So on a video call, the very first thing I do is, hey, good morning. I hold up my hand. Or, oh, so good to see you. And I hold up my hand. When I walk into a restaurant, I wave, oh, good to see you. When I walk across a room, I beckon people over to sit with me with an open palm. When someone comes into my office, I wave them through with an open palm. Literally, that immediately helps people trust you. And that sounds really crazy. That's for trust, but it's also for belonging, right? The other thing that people really want is they want to know, do you welcome me? Are you accepting me? Are you acknowledging me? And on a date especially, we're so scared that we're not welcome or that we're not deserving. And so you literally want to welcome someone with open palms, right? Like, come sit. Oh, it's so good to finally see you with your palms and hands open. That is a universal gesture of welcoming. So one, it's a really easy one. Always, always palm open, beckoning in the first 10 seconds. Yeah. The second thing that you want to do is create oxytocin. So oxytocin is a very complicated chemical in our body. It does lots of things, but for our purposes, it is the chemical of social connection. Oxytocin, when they give people nose sprays of oxytocin, they literally do this in the lab. They make people sniff oxytocin. When people do that, they share more profits when they play Prisoner's Dilemma. They immediately become more trustworthy. So oxytocin is what you want. It's the chemical that helps you bond. The problem is when we're nervous, we end up stifling that oxytocin loop. So how do we produce oxytocin? One is through eye contact. So the moment we mutually gaze with someone, we both begin to produce oxytocin. This also happens through a video call. So even looking from through a camera, we can produce oxytocin. So making eye contact and locking eyes within the first few seconds of interacting is going to immediately burst that oxytocin. The second way that we produce oxytocin is through touch. So the more touch, the longer the touch, the more oxytocin. So a handshake is okay. A long handshake is even better. A hug is the best. A cheek kiss is even better. A back pat is okay, but a around the arm or around the shoulder or a lower back touch is even better. Mm-hmm. All of those are producing this chemical loop that helps you feel more trustworthy.
Yeah.
The last thing I would say about the oxytocin is we also found, I did a research experiment with Dr. Paul Zak. He runs Immersion Neuroscience. He's like the chief oxytocin researcher and a good friend of mine. In the pandemic, we were wondering, how are we going to replace that touch? You know, we can do it on eye contact, but what are we going to do on these video calls? And so we had a hypothesis that if we said an oxytocin word, it would create a little bit of oxytocin effect. And that's exactly what we found. So if you are on a video call or in a phone call or even messaging, you can say, sending a digital high five, sending a virtual hug, wish we could cheek kiss, but for now this will have to do. Or besos, like signing up, besos or hugs and kisses. That even just saying touch words can help trigger oxytocin, which is a huge relief, even in writing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about touch and space in particular, because I know you say there are four areas around our body where we like to interact with different categories of people, the intimacy zone, the personal zone, social zone, and the public zone. And touch is one of those things that, you know, particularly in the Me Too era, that I think most people are paranoid about. Like, I remember when we had Nick Notice here, he said he had a lot of clients who were just absolutely terrified to try to kiss a date because they were scared they would be accused of something. And he said, you know, he said, there's a problem with that is he said, if you don't initiate, things aren't going to happen. He said, like, we can take this way too far. And so, yeah, I'm curious, like, how you deal with that.
Yes. Okay. So it's very important to be aware of people's comfort zones. And you just mentioned a great way to sort of test the waters. So there are these four zones of space. Now, across cultures, the ranges are a little bit different, but the four zones are the same. So about 18 inches apart is the intimate zone. That is reserved for people who we really are close to. It's like pre-kissing. I mean, if you hold up 18 inches from your face, it's really close. That's just reserved for people who we feel really close to. If someone comes into your intimate zone, it's likely that they are feeling quite comfortable with you. The next zone is about 18 inches to about 3 or 4 feet apart. Again, these are just approximations. It depends on your culture. That is the social zone. I'm sorry, the personal zone, which is where people like to have one-on-one conversations. We can reach out and touch easily. We can touch an arm or touch a shoulder. If someone's in that zone, it means that they feel comfortable enough to have some casual touch. Here's the key though. If someone stays in the social zone, so the social zone is 5 feet or more apart, that means they probably are not ready for touch. And that's very helpful because if someone's far enough away where when you hold your hand out straight, you cannot touch them, okay, they're not ready yet, right?
Yeah.
So you want that. That's a really easy way to know, does someone want to be touched? Are they getting close enough to touch? The second thing is I like to ask, prep people for touch. So I will say in pre-messages when I hang out with people, or even when I first get together, I'm a hugger, are you? Before I go in for the hug. And that way, if someone says, oh, not, I'm not a hugger, you can go, oh, no worries, let's high five. And you kind of laugh it off. Or they say, yes, I'm a hugger. And then you hug. Right? So I like to actually say the word, which one triggers oxytocin, right? So if I say I'm a hugger, I've already triggered oxytocin. And then two, that gives nice permission. Same thing with like, you know, I really want to kiss you right now, right? Like that's before you even go in. It's a kind of sexy way of asking permission. So I'm very into mentioning the words up front and watching their facial responsiveness. Do they eyebrow raise, nod and smile? Do they purse their lips, turn away and nod no? Right? Those are two very different reactions.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Let's talk about physical space, because one of the things you say is that when you're in one-on-one interactions where you need to build rapport, make a show of removing all barriers between you and others, clear the table in a client meeting, push aside a computer in a brainstorm session, move your clipboard to the side when talking to people, scoot your coffee over on a date, open body, open heart, open mind. And it's funny because this is one thing that I was very intentional about after a certain point when I would go on dates in San Diego. I found a hotel bar, and the reason I would choose that place was specifically because you couldn't sit at a table. You had to sit on benches next to each other.
Oh,
and
yes.
Let's just say that my dates went pretty well.
Yes, yes. Okay, so that's interesting because you have two choices to initiate intimacy. And this is why I kind of like cues, is you can be flexible with them, right? They're sort of like recipes. Right. So if you like something a little sweeter, you can add a little more warmth. If you like something a little bit more salty, you can add a little more confidence. This is the same thing with space. So you can create intimacy by being in someone's intimate zone side by side, right? Benches sitting next to each other. That is creating intimacy simply by being 18 inches apart. And you're making that safe by not being face to face, like nose to nose. Or you can create intimacy by being, by aligning your toes. Your toes, your torso, and your head. So fronting. So you can create great intimacy in a small cocktail table facing each other. That fronting, open heart, open body, moving everything aside. That's one way of creating intimacy. Or you can create intimacy by going right into their intimate zone, but side by side. Both of those are lovely options. You should pick what you're most comfortable with.
All right. I had to ask you about the John Stockton story because I'm a diehard NBA 2K basketball player. Like, I don't watch actual basketball, but you know, like that story struck me as fascinating because you say Stockton non-verbally telegraphed to other players where the ball would be before he ever passed without realizing it. You might be doing the same. And I was thinking about, you know, the idea of telegraphing your passes, because if, you know, somebody on the opposing team can see that you're telegraphing your passes, you're going to get the ball stolen. I know this because I play this video game religiously every day.
100%. So I was fascinated by Stockton. I've been fascinated by him for many years because he holds the highest record. And so, and by like a lot, I think I put the numbers in the book, like it's insane how many assists he's had. And so I ended up watching many, many, many of his plays. And he actually is quoted as saying that he, with his other players, other teammates, they know each other's nonverbal moves. They can telegraph to each other so quickly and so effectively that that's how he's able to have all these assists. So you're absolutely right. Other team members are trying to watch for these, but they're not going to be nearly as adept at noticing for another team's player, right? They just don't play as much. This is the benefit, by the way, of learning cues and syncing up your cues with your partners, your colleagues, your kids, your best friends. I think the best wing women and wingmen, the reason why a really good wingman or a really good wingwoman is so good is because you're telegraphing all these cues that no one else would even pick up on. So Stockton would often front. He would angle very, very quickly in like, you know, a millisecond. He'd shift his shoulders just so another player would know, oh, that ball's coming to me. And that's how he was able to get these assists. And they were so fast. And the other players were so attuned to see that he ended up, you know, having, he still holds the record for the most assists. It is the same thing with the people who are important in your life. When you're doing a double presentation, or when you're trying to talk to your partner, or you have a wingman, you have to have a look, a gesture, a smile to know exactly where this is my person. Will you help me? Or we got to go. Or I need rescuing. Those are the cues that are like, oh, the master secret sauce, right? That's how really good partners interact.
Yeah. Let's talk about two other things here. Posture and then, what your eyes reveal, because when I saw that Sexiest Man in the World thing, I was like, okay, Vanessa, I need you to find me a photographer who's going to literally redo my online dating photos based on this. So let's start with posture first. You say powerful posture isn't just important for your perceived confidence. It's important for your actual confidence. Here's a simple rule. The more powerful you feel, the more space you take up, the more powerful you look. So let's just, you know, for example, talk about going out to dinner at a restaurant or a bar, and we want to, you know, demonstrate power just from the way that we're carrying ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So I want to give you the weirdest measurement ever, but this is all you really have to think about when it comes to posture. I think that people, when they think about like sitting up straight or like what their mothers told them, you know, that's sort of helpful sitting up straight, but you could end up like puffing out your chest, which doesn't look that great. Or you feel like you're like a pupil in a classroom that also doesn't look that great. It looks very rigid. There's only one thing I want you to think about when it comes to posture, which is the distance between your earlobe and your shoulder. Weirdest distance, I know, but that is actually, especially on video calls, it's also, or in profile photos, the distance between your earlobe and your shoulder, the shorter that is, the more defeated, ashamed, and embarrassed or low power you look. And that is because, and you can try this, if you shrink your head down and roll your shoulders up, and I'm doing it right now, you can actually hear I have less vocal power. Like you can hear, I become a little more nasally. I go a little higher in my voice tone. And that's because when we're in a low power position, it changes our vocal power. The moment I relax my shoulders, I have a lot more volume. I am able to stay a little bit lower in my range. And that is because confident people, their shoulders are down and back. Their chin and their head is up really high, not out, but high. They have their chest nice and relaxed and their arms are loose by their side. When you walk into a bar, when you hop on video, when you walk into a meeting, I want you to maximize the distance between your ear and your shoulder. That's all I want you to think about. That is the most powerful thing you can do for your posture.
Okay.
And your profile photos too.
Let's talk about the eyes, because you say that when we widen our eyes, usually when experiencing emotions like fear and surprise, it allows us to see more. If we're afraid, we want to take in as much of our surroundings as possible to assess potential threats. And then when we narrow our eyes, it blocks out light so we can see greater detail. In some social situations, someone might flex their lower lid while trying to get to know you and understand you better. It's as if they're saying, I want to really see you. And you actually allude to the photos of, you know, the Sexiest Men Alive. And I'm just thinking to myself, I remember thinking to myself literally, oh, okay, cool. I need to find a photographer and basically say, make me look like this.
You do. You do. You do. So funny, funny pop culture story here is Zoolander, if you've seen the classic movie. Yes. Okay. Ben Stiller does a blue steel, right? And blue steel is basically him. He pouts his lips and he hardens his lower lid. So you can try pout your lips and harden your lower lid. You're blue steel. Okay. He and Will Ferrell, the reason they picked this is because they made fun of Pierce Brosnan, who on the red carpet in every single picture, if you look at Pierce Brosnan on the red carpet, every single picture, he is doing that. He's kind of pouting his lower lips and he's hardening his lower lid. Every single picture of Pierce is piercing eyes. Like literally it's a rule. So they were actually making fun of Pierce Brosnan with that photo. That was the inspiration. And when I saw this, I thought, wow. And then I looked at, of course, In the Name of Science, the 50th sexiest men alive. And on almost every picture, men have hard lower lids. Why? Across races, when we harden our lower lids, less light comes in. We're able to see more detail. And so if we're with a man who is flexing his lower lids at us, we literally are like, oh, he's deeply listening. He's trying to take in every detail about me. And that's what every human loves. Humans love it when you're trying to take in every detail about them.
Yeah. So what do I tell a photographer? Basically, okay. Get me to, yeah. So when you say, you know, harden your lower lids, describe it to me.
Okay. So I want you to try it when you have a photographer, and you should try this yourself first to get your right face. So you want to harden lower lid, and that could be with a smile or not a smile. So you can have a hardened lower lid if you just, like, for example, if I ask you to look at a far sign across the room to try to read it, if you just harden your lower lid just slightly, that's this sort of intense scrutiny. And you can partner that with a small smile. You can partner that with a little eyebrow raise, right? A lower lid flex and eyebrow raise is saying, like, want to talk to me? Do you want to talk to me?
I'm going to have you analyze my online dating pictures for the sake of, like, you know, we'll say it's for the sake of, you know, our listeners' research, you know, for them to understand.
I love it. So we should do some before and after. So we should do one neutral one. And we should do one of you harden lower lids. We should do a harden lower lids and eyebrow raise. We should do a harden lower lids and smile. And you can see the differences between them. And by the way, this is very subtle. You don't have to act like you're squinting. It's not a squint, right? It's just a soft lower lid flex. It's like a smolder, right? So I want you to think that you're just intensely looking at that camera. That is a nonverbal cue of scrutiny or deep listening. And boy, oh boy, do people like it.
Well, I'll have to A/B test this on a dating profile.
On the cover of my book, I have a lower lid flex, right? Like, I'm doing it on the cover of my book. So it's not just dating profiles. It's also it's intense, right? It shows intensity. If you don't want to be intense, you shouldn't do it.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about voice. Naturally, as a podcaster, this was something that really was fascinating to me. You say how we say our words, our tone, volume, pace, syntax, and cadence is just as important as what we say. We can tell a lot about a person, their emotional state, their intentions, and their personality from their voice. Understanding vocal cues is incredibly important for uncovering others' feelings toward you, your work, and your projects. And I think that this in particular struck me a lot, because probably one of the nicest things that people have said is you have a voice that's made for radio. It's just pleasant to listen to.
Like, I had a listener tell me that. You so do. Yes.
But I don't know why that happens. Like, I don't know what is the explanation for that. Like, I'm wondering why that is.
Oh, I know why it is. It's because when you speak in the back of your head, which sounds really crazy, but it's so I'm working to do it. You do it more naturally. If you have someone speaking in the front of their head, they tend to speak more like this. So they're like a lot more leaning forward, and they want to yell at you. They want to tell you what to do. They speak in the front of their mouth as opposed to speaking in the back of their head. Do you hear the difference there? Very subtle. You speak deeply in the back of your head. You also have a lot of, I think, space and resonance in your voice. So that nice low baritone, it's so nice to listen to. I totally agree. You have one of the best podcaster voices. Totally agree. Totally agree.
Thanks. Okay. Well, you know, now that you've, you know, inflated my ego, let's actually talk about how our listeners can do this for themselves.
Yes. Okay. So, first we use we manipulate our voice tone with breath, and this happens without us even realizing it. So when I run out of breath, I have to work harder to speak, which makes me speak higher up in my tone and also makes me push out my words. So then I begin to lose my vocal power. And then I sound more like I'm really, really trying. And that's a horrible thing to listen to. If I were to give my answers like this, it would sound very, very forced. That is because I was speaking at the end of my breath. The moment I take a deep breath and I maximize that space between my shoulder and my earlobe, that's another reason why we love to have that. And I speak on the out breath. It pushes the air out. It pushes me down lower. And that's a much higher point. So if you are on a call and you hear yourself going up here, I want you to take a deep breath and speak on the out breath. The mistake that we make is we speak when we're out of breath. So we start a sentence and we have lots of breath and we're talking really well. And then we run out of breath and then we kind of try to push the end of our sentence out. So I would rather you pause mid-sentence and take a breath to lower your tone as opposed to trying to get your words out when you're out of breath.
Yeah. Let's talk about volume because as you know, I was telling you, in my family, there's just one volume, loud. But you say that true vocal power comes from showing mastery of volume dynamism. Controlling your volume shows you have control of your message. When master communicators want to show excitement, they speak up. When they want to share secrets or insider information, they speak quietly, forcing listeners to lean in. And reading that makes me think about something that I've noticed as a pattern when I've interviewed people. I noticed that a lot of podcasters dread the awkward silence. Even if it's like 5 to 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I've noticed that when I say absolutely nothing, which I have actually gotten decent at doing, that is usually when I will get the most profound and beautiful sound bites out of you.
Yes. Yes. So that pause. So pausing is powerful. So first of all, being masterful with your volume, being purposeful, I would say, with your volume is really important. So if you have a presentation or something important to share, you should know where you want to dial up and speak louder because you are passionate about it. And when you want to share a little insider information, a little background, and you go a little bit quieter, that helps the listener. It actually is like giving them cliff notes for where they should be excited and pay attention and where they should lean in and sort of hear background information. So that's actually a helpful cue for the listener. The second thing is that when you allow for pauses, when you volume shift or before and after answers, it's also allowing the other person to go a little bit deeper, right? So you can use a breathing pause, so time for you to take breath or reset your volume, as also a way to ask anything else, right? Like those pauses are a way to just see, do you have anything else in there that you want to talk to me about? My mom actually shared this tip with me very early on, and she said to me that a lot of the times to get men to go deeper, to show them that you really want to listen, after they give an answer, wait 3 to 5 seconds to see if that you honor them, that you are waiting to see if they have anything else they want to share. Because women, we have it, not always, but women have the tendency to jump in and just share their answers and to give their opinion really fast. And that was the best thing she could have said to me because I ended up marrying an introvert. And my introverted husband, who's very quiet, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have gotten to know him as deeply as in the very beginning. And that was one of the best tips for interacting with introverts is give them that extra 3 to 5 seconds as a way of saying, I'm still here. No rush.
Yeah. So one other thing you say about vocals is emotion is what captures people's attention and hooks them in to want to listen. Words imbued with emotion are more easily remembered. And the funny thing is that people have always asked, what is it that makes you choose a podcast guest? And I always say genuine curiosity. That's it. Yeah, if I'm curious, yeah. Because I know that if I'm curious, then I'll never be bored. And I pretty much know that if I'm bored interviewing somebody, I will cut the interview in the middle and tell the person to go back and listen to an episode or just tell them this isn't going the way I need it to, which is not polite at all. And, you know, some people have told me to go to hell. Others have
for your reader,
agreed.
For your listener.
I mean, that is literally why I do it. I'm like, if I'm bored listening to this person during the interview, there's no way our listeners won't be bored.
Yeah, so true. So true. So yes, go ahead. Yes, I totally agree. Thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, but the thing is, I think that people try to fake this too sometimes. You know, like, I don't think you can fake emotion.
You know, you can fake it till you make it to a certain extent. I do not believe in faking it till you make it. I think that a lot of the times you can leak boredom, right? It's really, really hard to conceal our emotions. So I agree with you. It's really, really hard to conceal or to change our emotions, especially boredom, apathy, anger, or fear. It's really, really hard to hide those emotions. And so there's some other emotions that are a little bit easier to hide. Like sometimes we can hide our shame if we're embarrassed. You don't always know that. Sometimes we can hide our discomfort. That's one that we can sometimes hide. Like you don't always know if someone's uncomfortable socially. But if you're bored, it's very, very hard to feign interest. You can do it, but it is exhausting, right? And so, I mean, if you have the ability to cut it off, cut it off. Life is too short.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because it just reminded me of a story. I remember going on a date with this girl in San Diego who channeled dead people. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I like talking to people who are alive. And 45 minutes into the date, she looks at me and she's like, I'm not really feeling this. I'm going to go and I'm going to pay for my own drinks. And I looked at her, I was like, thank you. And I was like, why don't people do that more often? Like, why are we sitting here when clearly, you know, both of us are bored just to be polite?
Amazing. By the way, I do think that the world is going more towards that. I think that we are learning social assertiveness in a way that we can all swallow. I also think we've realized like life is too short and our social interactions need to be precious now. And so I think that we're going to start seeing more behavior like that, where if there's a bad date or people aren't clicking, or like toxic friends or friends out of habit. You know, I lost all my friends by habit. I used to have friends that I just sort of saw because we always saw each other and we were old friends and why not? We invited each other to birthday parties. Well, in the pandemic, that stopped. And so I think that we're getting to the point where we're not going to have any more accidental friends. We're not going to have any more relationships out of habit. We're going to begin to choose them. And that's going to empower us to be more assertive. And I'm excited for that. Like, let us start that with this podcast. Like, let's start more social assertiveness, please.
Yeah. Let's talk now about imagery. I mean, obviously, as somebody who runs a creative brand that uses a ton of imagery, I'm really fascinated by, you know, what we're communicating with our imagery, because I know you go into detail about color. Explain to me, you know, particularly in the context of like a website or something like that, you know, how do we communicate what we want to communicate?
Yes. So imagery was a really fun chapter, right? It's actually one of the longest chapters in the book. And that's because there are so many cues that we send with images, as we talked about at the very beginning with our neural maps, right? So images are one of the most powerful ways to trigger neural maps. And so on our marketing materials, in our website, in our profiles, we have to be very, very purposeful with the kind of images that we're using. And that can include color. Now, I really struggle with the color in the book because color psychology is very, very mostly pseudoscience. It's very, very hard to reliably study color associations because everyone has different color associations. Different cultures have different color associations. That is actually how I teach it, which is, we need to know, or you need to know, what your color associations are and what the color associations might be for your ideal person. And that's what you should try to trigger. So for example, for science of people, I knew that we're very sciencey, obviously science of people. And so I wanted to trigger neural maps of professional, of even like newspaper. So our main brand colors are black and white, right? Especially in the beginning, they were black and white because I purposefully wanted to trigger that. And then I made our pop-up color yellow. This is in the very beginning because I wanted people to think of highlighting. Like when you're reading something black and white, like a book, the only color that usually comes into it is a highlighter, typically. And that worked for many years because I specifically used highlighter, like a highlighter line as an image in my website as a way to say, these are the highlights I want you to take out for you. I'm giving you the cliff notes of some of this science. That image paired with our verbal mission was immediately resonant with the people who liked that. If you loved reading and you loved science and you wanted social hacks, we were your people. If you were not a big reader and you like skimming and you just want to see it in a TikTok, we're not your people, right? And so I think that you can think about, what does your ideal person want? What kind of images and neural maps do you want to create for them? You should be signaling to them throughout your entire website. What color is going to resonate with them? Is red too much, right? Like cues, we decided to do red because I wanted it to be a little bit more urgent. I wanted it to feel kind of loud. And it is a loud book. I mean, the cover and the red is loud. And I wanted that. Like, I wanted people to be like, oh, wow, this is big. And if you don't want big, it's not for you. So yeah. Same thing as what kind of colors, what kind of images are going to trigger the right things for the right people?
It's funny you say that because red is like a integral part of our brand colors. Like, and yes. My friends always tease me when I got a pair of custom shoes. He was like, is everything in your life an advertisement for Unmistakable? I'm like, pretty much. He was like, those pretty shoes much. Are literally like the color of your website. He was like, yep.
We're
He's like, you did that on purpose, didn't you? I was like, yes.
Yes. We're entrepreneurs. We have to constantly talk about our business.
Jay-Z would call that an empire state of mind.
There you go. There you go. Boom. Boom. I like it.
Red in particular, though, is a color that fascinates me. And I am curious about this. Like, I feel like, to me, there's one thing that I think I find completely irresistible in a room, and that's a woman who walks in a red dress. Like, I can't not notice that.
Oh, I like
what
it.
What is that about?
That's, by the way, that's a woman who puts on a red dress wants to signal to men who are going to appreciate a red dress, right? They're signaling in a way. By the way, a red dress is not appealing to every man. It's not. No. So one is that's a signal to you, right? That's the kind of attention she wants. And then the actual scientific thinking about this is that red typically means ripe. So back in our caveman days, we were hunting for ripe strawberries or ripe raspberries or red apples. And of course, there are other colors of fruit as well. But red was typically, this means either ripe or stay away from this, right? Red poisonous, red don't eat it. And so red is just a color of attention. Not always positive, sometimes negative, which is why I said red is just loud. And if you want someone who likes that, fantastic. If you want something more demure, use a pastel.
Well, you know, it's funny because I remember talking to Mars Dorian, who kind of really was the guy behind the visual voice of Unmistakable. And he grew up in East Germany before the fall of the Berlin Wall. And when he told me about all this, I said, oh my God, everything about the way that you illustrate suddenly makes sense to me. Everything you do basically screams with a complete disregard for authority.
It was signal. It was signal to you. Like, you could feel it even in the stroke of the way that the art was done, that it signaled, it calls out to you.
Yeah. Which is why I liked it so much. And I think that's why he was the one that was responsible for so much of what we did.
That's very purposeful. It drives me crazy when people use stock images that are just like sort of like, yeah, sure, I need a picture of people talking. And I have now a team that does my website, and I'm always fighting with them. I'm like, this stock image is not on brand. Like, we cannot use this stock image. And so a fight that I have internally with my team is like, we can't use stock images because we're saying we have to stand out. So using a stock image is the exact opposite of what we're saying. Yet we do need a picture to visually cue people. What's the picture? So actually, yeah. It's funny because internally, that's a fight we have constantly every week. We spend a ton of money on quote unquote unique stock photography and our own stock photography because it's a huge issue. So it's just funny that also internally is something that we think about a lot too.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember the first time that we saw the first design of the Unmistakable Creative website when we rebranded. I was like, this doesn't look like a website for creatives. And I remember looking at it and I was like, I know what's wrong. I was like, we need to get rid of all the stock photography and we need to have Mars custom design all the icons. And that was pretty much what changed everything.
Yes, yes. So now, look, if I get it, if people listening are like, I don't have that kind of resource, I don't have those kind of resources, that's okay. Like, I would rather have it be minimal with the right fewer callouts than lots of random callouts that you can't control, right? Like, yeah. I would much, much rather you be purposeful with where you can be.
Yeah. All right. So I have a few final questions and we'll wrap things up. So this is a lot to keep in mind. You have to consciously think about this while you're doing it, or is it at a certain point does it just become how you operate unconsciously? Because like you said, like, I don't have to think about the tonality of my voice. This is just the way that I speak. Like, I'm not sitting here thinking, okay, let me have this inflection here and that inflection here. Although I do actually have a question regarding voice, but we'll get back to that.
Yes, not anymore. So the nice thing about cues are, luckily our brain is already very aware of cues. So labeling them actually might feel more like, I'm labeling my intuition. So hopefully a lot of the cues you'll be like, yes, I do this naturally, but didn't know why. So that's a couple of the cues, which are already happening naturally. But cues are very much like working out for the first time, right? The first time that you do a squat, you have to think about your form, where you're like, okay, how are my feet angled? Are my knees over my toes? Keep my back straight. Like, you're very aware of every aspect of the squat. Then you do it again and again. You do it a week later. You do it 3 weeks later. Then after a while, you're not even thinking about your form anymore because you have this muscle memory. It is the same thing with cues. The first time you try them on, it's going to be a little clunky. You're going to be like, okay, like, do I nod? Okay, now I tilt a little bit too much. Okay, now lean in. Oh, what, we're in the social zone. Great. And that's okay, because it's like learning the fundamentals. Then the muscle memory will kick in. So I always say stick with it, because the right cues will stick with you and they'll become very habitual. Now, I barely think about them. They're so intuitive to me that I am able to develop, I devote all my cognitive load towards just connecting.
Yeah. So one thing I was curious about in terms of vocals, I, to this day, still hate the way that we end the show. Like, I can't think of a better way to end this than say, we'll wrap the show with that. And I'm like, okay. So ending a conversation, what do you know about that?
So I like to use a vocal cue to end conversation, which is using like the closing tone. And the closing tone is really great if it's partnered with a verbal exit cue. So verbal exit cues are usually like a future mention. So like, what are you up to this weekend? Well, cool. I hope you have a great time with that. And it was great talking to you, right? I mentioned a future mention, then you can hear me go into that closed tone, or it could be a follow-up. So, well, great. I will definitely reach out to you on LinkedIn. I'll send you all those assets. And it was so great talking to you. Thanks so much for doing this. Right? Yeah. So it's a verbal, a future mention or a follow-up plus that closed tone. And we know that as humans that we're about to close. That's a really effective way to end, because you're almost like doing like a close out, right? You're like allowing the person to slowly ramp down.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, I feel like I could sit here and talk to you for like 5 hours.
So interesting. I love it too. I know.
Yeah. So I want to finish with my final question, which I've asked you before. And it's always interesting to see how people answer this question when they come back. What do you think?
I don't even remember my last answer. So it'll be good
makes
to hear.
Yes. Somebody or something unmistakable.
Yes. I'm glad I don't remember what I said originally. You'll have to tell me if it was the same. I think being ruthlessly who you are, going back to what we first mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I tried for a long time to be everyone else. I tried for a long time to be a chameleon and try to fake it till I make it. And it's never worked. And I think that the more that you're ruthlessly who you are, the more that you figure out your unique flavor of charisma, that is what makes people unmistakable. It's not that they're trying to be someone thing they're not. They're not trying to be someone else. They're not trying to blend in. They are ruthlessly themselves and they're okay with it.
Amazing. Well, I have one request. I was wondering if you would be willing to give away a copy or a couple of copies of your books for people who would be willing to share the interview.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm happy to give away a copy. Yes. And I can sign it for whoever. First of all, if you buy the book, amazing. If you share this episode, even more amazing. So yes, I'd love to send out I'll do a personally signed copy to someone. Yeah.
Great. Well, we'll put a link on the actual page for the episode for people to share to win a copy of Vanessa's book. But where can people find out more about you, your work, the book, the research, and you know what basically is a rabbit hole of interesting facts about human behavior?
Yes. Okay. So the book is available wherever books are sold, Amazon, airports, Barnes & Noble. It also got picked up internationally, so it should be available internationally as well. And then, of course, you can check me out on YouTube. I'm Vanessa Van Edwards. I have a ton of cue breakdowns, by the way, that I couldn't put in the book. Like, I break down The Rock and Obama and Justin Bieber, and I do a whole Britney Spears cue breakdown. So if you want to check out that, you can. And then scienceofpeople.com is where I have all my articles and resources too.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.